Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Far too often, the news we get from the Metro East is not good, usually because it relates to economic disadvantage, lack of resources for good governance, and crime. They're all related and create big problems for law enforcement as well as for civic and political leaders. On today's program, we're going to be talking about problems, how they're being dealt with, and possible solutions with people who are taking it all on head-on. Joining me in studio, Stephen Wigginton is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois. Brendan Kelly is the state's attorney for St. Clair County. And Ann Rogers is mayor of Washington Park. I welcome you all. Thanks so much for being with us today. Mayor Rogers, I'm going to begin with you, and I'll put the same question. It's actually a premise to the other guests in studio, but would you agree with me that the people of the Metro East basically get a bad rap because of basically a few bad apples?
I would actually say the people, I would say the cities, our surrounding cities, sister cities, East St. Louis, Allerton, Centerville. Yes, we do. As we get a bad stigma, what I don't like about it is the fact that we do get a bad rap. And everyone, a majority of our citizens, we have good residents. We have residents that actually want something. We have residents, working residents, that actually is striving to do the best, you know, within the community. So, unfortunately, yes, we do.
Steve, same question to you.
Absolutely. I'm a lifelong resident, born and raised in the Metro East area. And Brendan and I both know as law enforcement officers that it's about 10% of the people that make it difficult for the 90% of the people that are good, hardworking individuals. All of these communities, Washington Park, East St. Louis, Allerton, Brooklyn, they all have very many good citizens. And the mayor and Brendan and I know that because we're out in the communities. We meet with these people frequently. And they're doing their best under some very difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Brendan Kelly, again, I'll get your input on this.
I have the same answer. I think there are many great people in these communities. They're living under very difficult circumstances. I think some of the difficulties that they face in terms of the reputation of these communities, in terms of governance, in terms of some of the corruption issues, the challenges we have with law enforcement, the poverty, they're all problems that have been built up for 60 years. That's not the fault of the people that are living in those communities. Some of them are very, very impoverished. They have no ability to be able to sell their property, move to another place. And so they're trapped. And they are good people that still deserve some kind of basic governance, some kind of good, reasonable services, some sense that their community has a potential to be better. And they do deal with a very difficult stigma that comes with a reputation that has been built up over 60 years.
I was just about to say that this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, why has it not changed, do you think, Brent?
Well, I think that there is the challenges that I think you have are so multiple layered. And I think there's a tendency for us to be sort of lazy about the solution as a community, as leaders, and say, well, it's just one silver bullet that's going to fix it all, that we could just throw money at it, that we can just do a takeover. That's a simple thing that will fix it all. And frankly, there just isn't. And I think that you have some very balkanized institutions where you have multiple layers of government, where you have vested interests that aren't necessarily unified. They may all want to be better. They may all want to serve their citizens better, but they don't all speak with one voice. And I think there is a sense that it's been this way for so long, so for them, they have almost accepted it in some ways, that it will never be fixed. And I think that's the biggest challenge. I think that's the biggest challenge for leaders like Ann and myself and Mr. Wigginton, is to say, look, it doesn't have to be this way. And we can get people on the same page. We can work through these obstacles. We can work through the layers of bureaucracy and government. We can work through the attitudes that have been built up over years. It can be done. I think that's the big challenge.
I think, Mayor, that most people think that the fragmentation problem is peculiar only to this side of the river. But I gather from what I've just heard that it is an issue there as well.
It is definitely an issue, and definitely in Washington Park, like I stated before, East St. Louis, Allerton and our Metro East. With that being said, a lot of times when I'm out, when you're out and about, you someone else may ask the question as, you know, where do you stay? Whether it's Washington Park in East St. Louis, and you are looked upon as you're East St. Louis, you know, you're Washington Park. I've been asked that question. I've been asked that question as, you know, before. I can't believe that you stay in Washington Park. And my response was, how do we look? My walk, my talk, that lets you know right there that you have people that's within Washington Park and East St. Louis that want something. The children that is well-educated also. So once again, that we can build, I know for sure that within Washington Park, there is a change that is actually greatly needed, and it can change. So if we all put our minds together and resources, and one of the things that we need within Washington Park is revenue. So when you actually get there, and even, you know, education is big. So there's change. Change is actually coming.
Steve Wigginton, this economy is not conducive to producing more revenue, obviously. Your office is being affected even now by this government shutdown, is it not?
Absolutely. We're operating under very difficult circumstances right now. I have laid off 35%, up to 40% of my office is furloughed. Unfortunately, they want to work. They want to come to work. They can't work. But then not only that, Don, when I've had meetings scheduled with investigative agencies to come to my office, and they're being canceled because the investigators are furloughed, they're laid off. So the government shutdown has had a huge impact on the Department of Justice, and I don't think the public totally realizes or appreciates what is happening with the government shutdown. It is extremely harmful.
How is it impeding your efforts to crack down on crime? You and Brendan, of course, are walking in concert on this.
Well, I can tell you, yesterday, I had a meeting scheduled with an investigative agency who's investigating a corruption case in the Metro East area, and that investigation is stalled right now because the investigators are furloughed and could not come to my office. So we couldn't proceed. We couldn't have a plan of action.
I think much of the focus of our discussion today is probably going to be on the crime situation. Brendan, as you indicated earlier, they're all related, and poverty is certainly a major contributor to crime.
Certainly.
What tools are at your disposal at this moment to deal with it?
Well, there are the traditional tools of law and order, crime and punishment. Someone chooses to do something very bad, whether it's a minor crime or something serious, a violent crime that they kill someone in the community like Washington Park. They're committing serious crimes related to drug trafficking or prostitution or those type of things. That is the traditional model. And myself and Mr. Wigginton have been working very closely on using the tools that we have available to us to go after those traditional wolves that are in the community. But there are a great deal of number of people who maybe fall into the sheep category instead of the wolf category. And separating those two can be very difficult. But beyond just the traditional prosecution model, we need to work with leaders like Ann. We need to work with community leaders that may be involved in the churches. We need to find ways for those people that maybe could get a second chance. Maybe that they don't necessarily need to go off to prison, but there are some other resources for them. We need to work with parolees closer, those people who are likely to reoffend, focus on making sure that they don't reoffend. I think there's a mindset that has developed over the past 10 years among prosecutors. It's different than what it was, the traditional model, where we need to talk about prevention. And that can mean prevention on an individual basis, but also means prevention in terms of going after the magnets of criminal activity, looking at criminal activity that's related to certain locations, predictable, recurring crime at places like liquor stores, nightclubs, derelict property, going after those factors, those environmental factors, and I don't mean just in terms of the environment, in terms of cleanliness, although that is a part of it, but those things in the environment within these four communities like Brooklyn, Allegan, and Washington Park and East St. Louis, and focusing our efforts on those. Just the typical kind of patrolling and the typical sort of bad crime happens, let's catch the bad guy and put him in jail. That doesn't do much to break this cycle of poverty, to break this cycle of violence and corruption. You have to do more systemic and strategic things.
Mm-hmm. Ann Rogers, you've been nodding throughout Brendan's comments here.
Absolutely.
Let me just point out, and you can clarify for me, the last thing I saw concerning Washington Park had to do with your police chief saying, disband this department. What's the status of that now? I mean, that's a big tool.
Yes, it is. Actually, that is one of the items I would say that we are still negotiating. It's on the table. We will exhaust every option regarding our police department. With that actually being said, we have good police officers, of course. You know, when you come out and serve the citizens in Washington Park, you know, that's a great thing to do. But with that actually being said, as far as to dissolve, we have to look at, you know, once again, every option, what's best for the community, the residents of Washington Park. With that actually being said, when you look into dissolving, you have to talk about, once again, revenue. You're talking about money. Do we have enough to operate, you know, as far as the police department? But with that actually being said, that is definitely on the table. But at the same time, we have to exhaust. You know, my position was I wanted to exhaust every option before I move forward.
Steve, how do you and the state's attorney work together? You're federal, Department of Justice, obviously, and we're talking about St. Clair County State's Attorney.
Well, State's Attorney Brendan Kelly's been a great partner, probably one of my closest friends in law enforcement, and we do approach prosecution the same way. It's no longer the traditional just we process cases. We're not prosecutors in that sense. Attorney General Holder and the President of the United States told me when I was in Washington, D.C., is you're not a case processor. You're a community problem solver. Go back to your communities and try to help solve the problems. And so that's what we've done. I mean, we need a comprehensive approach. We know that just prosecuting people and putting them in prison is not the answer. We need to start as early as possible. We need to get in the schools. And Brendan Kelly and I have made an effort. I know in his state's attorney's office, they've set up a juvenile justice council. I think only the second county in the state of Illinois that has done that. We participate in that. The state's attorney and I, we participate. We have a joint violent crime task force that we meet every other Tuesday in East St. Louis. It's probably 20 different federal and state agencies show up for that. We have a targeted approach on our investigations like we did this summer. We have operations. We have to be smart on crime, Don. We have very limited resources, and they're even much more so now under the government shutdown. But we have limited resources. We have to target those people who are the worst offenders, and that's what we do.
I want to pick up on a couple of those points, and we'll do so when we come back. We have to take a break right now. We're talking about the situation in the Metro East, the problems that the communities over there face, and what is being done to try to solve some of these problems. My guests in studio are Mayor Aaron Rodgers of Washington Park, Brendan Kelly, State's Attorney for St. Clair County, and all Stephen Wigginton is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois. We'll come back to continue that conversation in just a moment, and we'll be taking your calls eventually as well. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWNU. Hello again, and welcome back as we resume our conversation on the situation in the Metro East. Much of our focus in this program today is going to be dealing with the crime situation, which is a big one, and it's related to other issues that are very important to the communities over there, including an impoverished population to a very large degree. My guests in studio are Steve Wigginton, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois, Brendan Kelly is the State's Attorney for St. Clair County, and Aaron Rodgers is mayor of Washington Park. One thing that came up during our break there, Brendan, that you wanted to be sure we talk about, and I wanted to as well, and that is the Metro East Police District Commission that Governor Quinn has just activated. How is that going to work, and how specifically would it relate to Washington Park?
Well, I think it's a good example of how a cooperative approach can very slowly but surely produce some results. There's a very long history in terms of outsiders maybe not treating these communities the way they should. There's a good deal of skepticism about takeovers and task forces and those type of things because they come in, it's temporary, and then they leave, and they really don't get to the root of the problem. And there's a long history in terms of the civil rights issues and other complicated political dynamics that make people skeptical of these type of efforts. But what's good about the Police District Commission is that it does include not just somebody from the outside imposing upon these communities, but it includes the leadership and representatives of the communities. And I think that the progress that's being made It's not sexy. It's not exciting, but it is the fundamentals. We've just completed a first draft of a 464-page policy manual for all four of these departments, these police departments. If you look at these four departments and the troubles that they've had with ethics, with training, with just poor investigative abilities, it's hard to tell these officers to do things by the book when there's no book. And that's what the Metro East Police District Commission's first initiative is, and it's producing some good results, is getting these departments on a stable footing in terms of their policies, their procedures, making sure things are done the way that they're supposed to be done. It's very easy to devolve into corruption when you don't have clear rules. It's very easy to devolve into poor investigative outcomes when you don't have a clear guidelines as to how these things are to be done. And we're making good progress on that front. We're making some. We have great assistance from the Department of Justice. My partner, U.S. Attorney Mr. Wigington, is probably in a very unique partnership locally compared to his other U.S. attorneys. He's been a fantastic partner. I talked to other prosecutors around the country. They wish they had this kind of cooperation. And the resources he's brought to bear from the Department of Justice are providing a great deal of assistance to the Metro East Police District Commission also. So they're working on the resources front, even in difficult circumstances, but they're working on laying that proper foundation, those things that are not very interesting, they're not very exciting, but you need to have the paperwork right. You need to have good policies in place. And that's where the district commission is, and the chiefs that are there and the mayors that are involved are doing the hard work of getting that done.
Ann Rogers, is it too early to say that this is working for you and your community?
Well, by it actually just getting off the ground, again, as far as, like Brendan just stated, again, as far as with the handbook, one of the things that was first talked about, the policies and the procedures, absolutely correct. How do you actually talk about the policies and the procedures when you don't have nothing to actually go by? So that's one of the things that was talked about head on when the Metro East Police District came about. So it is, I am seeing good things as far as with the Metro East Police District, yes. But is it early? It's a little early. But with that being said, we are going in the right direction.
Steve, you can bring some federal muscle that might otherwise not be available, can you not? I'm thinking in particular of the ability you have, for instance, in gun cases to bring in federal law that would, as I understand it from what I've read, increase the sentence for someone who is a violator.
Yeah, we've been very aggressive in addressing gun violence. Our prosecutions are up 95% over past administrations in terms of dealing with felons in possession of weapons or drug users in possession of weapons. And we do have the ability under the federal statutes to prosecute someone who is prohibited from possessing a weapon. They can get up to 10 years in prison. And our judges in the Southern District of Illinois who are working in East St. Louis and appreciate the danger and the violence that the individuals and citizens live in daily have been giving some very severe sentences to individuals we prosecute. We actually, Don, I have a prosecutor from our office, an assistant United States attorney, who meets every other week with a prosecutor from State's Attorney Brendan Kelly's office, and we review every gun case to determine whether or not it is appropriate addressed in state court or whether it should be addressed in federal court.
What would the difference in sentencing be with regard to state law versus federal law?
Well, there are some circumstances on the state level, well, depending on the nature of the offense, that they could result in probation. And I think that's been identified on the Illinois state law level as a real weakness that we have in terms of our sentencing. If you look at New York and the huge drop in crime that they've seen over the past 15, 20 years, one of the factors, not the entire thing, but one of the factors you can point to is that most of the gun offenses, it's automatic jail time. It's not even discretionary. And depending on if we can make that case, if we can pass it off to the U.S. Attorney's Office and we think they can get more bang for the buck and send a stronger message about gun violence, we work with them and make sure that they're able to take that case. There are some circumstances where state law can actually be, under the right criteria, even stronger than the federal law. So we look to see what the circumstances are, what the evidence is that we have, what the evidence is in this particular case, and we decide who can proceed this and get the most strong result.
I'm assuming that the people on the street know that there's a chance that they can get probation for a gun violation. Steve Wiginton, the question now is the word out on the street that it can really be a lot tougher on them than before?
Well, we've heard anecdotally, in speaking with Sheriff Watson in Sinclair County and Sheriff Bob Hertz in Madison County, both have commented to me, and I've heard anecdotally that people in Sinclair County Jail are actually telling guards, get my attorney in here. I want to plead guilty before Wiginton comes and gets me. We've heard that in both counties.
And that's been very helpful.
And we issue what's called leverage letters, too, where we you know, if Brendan Kelly has a state court prosecution that's ongoing and we perhaps might want to take it federally, we send a letter to Mr. Kelly's office saying we're thinking about taking this case. And apparently that letter is then transmitted to the defense counsel, who suddenly their client then realizes it might be best for them to work out their deal in state court.
Move along, yes. Take your time, your Illinois DOC time.
And Rogers, are you hearing about any of this from your vantage point?
Well, with that actually being said, this is actually what I say is it's good news. It is, but as far as hearing about it right now, this is actually fresh upon me right now. Mm-hmm. But with that actually being said, I've been actually, as far as with Brendan and Mr. Wiginton, these are some intelligent, what I call intelligent gentlemen that I love working with. And once again, Brendan's name is out there constantly as far as being the force, as far as trying to make it better in the Metro East. And I appreciate him, and I'm grateful to be working right along with him.
And that's Mayor Ann Rogers of Washington Park in Illinois. And let me remind our listeners that you're listening to St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Mm-hmm. What about the notion of gun courts? It's been getting a lot of attention over here. Is that something, Steve, that has any appeal to you?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of gun courts. In fact, I'm an alumni of the Circuit Attorney's Office. I was there in the early 1990s. And so I'm in favor of gun courts. I'm in favor of judges taking gun cases seriously. I'm in favor of judges in St. Louis establishing higher bonds for gun offenders to keep them off the street, because prosecutors like Brendan Kelly and I, we know that those individuals who want to carry guns and want to do wrong, they're more likely to commit more crimes as they're on the street. They're not one-hit wonders. This is their business.
Brendan Kelly, how about you?
Well, I think gun courts are certainly one potential positive solution. I think the sentencing guidelines, I think, are critical for us in our state. I think the gun court models have worked in some communities. I think perhaps in our situation, the laws that we have, if we could strengthen those, it wouldn't matter what court we're in. I think that's probably key for us, whether it's a specialty court or not. And I think that's definitely a weak point that we have in Illinois law is the lack of mandatory sentences for some of the gun offenses. And I'm talking not to your lawful gun owner. I'm talking a person who has no authority to own a gun. You're someone who has a mental health problem. You're someone who's a felon. Someone who has a history of
a stolen
of criminal
gun.
A stolen gun. We know that leads to bad places, and the cost to society is much greater than the cost of us putting that person in prison.
Right. While we're talking about courts, and this call that we're going to take doesn't relate to gun courts at all, but it's a subject that would probably come up in any context in a discussion like this. Let's go to Joe in Columbia, Illinois. Joe, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thanks to your guests. This is a great topic. My question simply concerns the whole issue with Judge Crist, Judge Cook. There was optimism back in May that this might be a crack in the edifice with respect to corruption in St. Clair County, and it was indicated that there was plenty of people who were being interviewed, and so there's optimism that we could maybe get to the bottom of some of this. But really not too much has happened since May, and it seems like everybody has closed ranks, and there's no accountability with Judge Beresevic. What should we think of this, and where is it likely to go in general terms?
Joe, thanks for the call. There are two sides to every coin, and of course we talk about problems on the lower level, the street level, the municipal level. It also is an issue at a higher level, Brendan.
Sure. First of all, this is an ongoing federal prosecution, ongoing federal investigation. So in terms of the specifics of it, I certainly don't want to interfere in Mr. Wigington's cases that are still ongoing. I would say that everyone is taking the situation very, very seriously. It's a matter which to me is personally been a disturbing set of circumstances. And I think what I can say to the caller is that everyone that I've been involved with and that I know, I see that they are making every effort to ensure that the integrity of the judicial system in St. Clair County is protected, zealously protected, and that people's trust in the system is restored to the extent that it has been damaged.
We'll get a comment from Steve in just a moment. I have to take another break. Let's do that now. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation about the situation in the Metro East, which is focusing pretty much during the course of this discussion on crime issues over there. Now, back to our discussion with Steve Wigington, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois, Brendan Kelly, the State's Attorney for St. Clair County, and Mayor Ann Rogers of Washington Park. We have been talking about the malfeasance, corruption, whatever word you want to use, concerning some of the judiciary over in St. Clair County. Steve Wigington, I know this is an area where you can't talk much because of this thing is still very much in the process through the courts. But it seems to me that, given what we were talking about earlier about image and stigma, that this just intensifies that, but at a much different level.
Well, it is extremely harmful. It's harmful to the entire legal profession when you have a judge who is alleged to have been a drug user while also running drug court. I'm a lawyer. I think every lawyer should be troubled by that aspect, and it is damaging to the courthouse. It's damaging to the public trust in the courthouse. But we do have an ongoing investigation. It is proceeding. There are still interviews ongoing. Not only did we indict Judge Michael Cook in this case, but we've also had an indictment against a probation officer for St. Clair County. And we've also had seven other indictments come down resulting from this investigation. So to respond to your caller's inquiry regarding the status, Judge Michael Cook was arrested in May of this year. And now here we are some 5 months later, 6 months later, and right now the count is 8 or 9 individuals indicted as part of this investigation. So we've been quite aggressive in our operation, but we're also being very professional and very careful and making sure we do the right thing.
Ann Rogers, how does this play from your perspective, the fact that you've got people of relatively high rank, if you will, in the judiciary who are in this kind of a jam?
Well, I had to take a moment here. Actually, hearing that back a couple of months ago, it did put a bad taste. I mean, if I have to be honest, as a citizen of Washington Park, it was a bad taste because you, as anyone else, you look at them to be actually correcting the citizens or, that residence. But with that actually being said, it did put a bad taste. But at the same time, I had to actually look at it that these persons were actually human, too. But with that being said, again, I know that this is hard, of course, not only for myself, for Brendan Kelly, who actually sits there day to day, and to know that you actually have someone that's within the camp that is actually doing those type of things.
It's really a setback. I think everybody is probably pretty much agreed on that. Let's take another call. Barbara Ann will join us from Town and Country. Barbara Ann, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me on. I just wanted to share with your guest today that I worked for the Family Court of St. Louis County for 14 years, and I worked with a very successful program that's at the court now. I'm no longer with the court, but it's called Payback, and it's a way to teach juveniles accountability, responsibility, and some pre-employment training skills. and we had a 96% successful completion rate. So it has expanded, Payback expanded into the city and the St. Charles County, and I thought maybe they might want to talk with the court in the county to see about getting it set up over in St. Clair County. So I just wanted to share that with you.
All righty. Well, we've got the person to talk about it, and Brendan Kelly. Go ahead.
Well, as the state's attorney, I have the privilege of being the chair of the Juvenile Justice Council. And some of the things that we focused on with juvenile issues in St. Clair County are the type of concepts that she's talking about. And we are doing very similar things within St. Clair County. We're just about to start a teen court where you'll have other juveniles, which will be, if they've committed some type of violation of the law, they will be in front of their peers, and they will get to have some input in deciding what the consequence should be, and that will include things like restitution. That will include things like work and community service or other resources they need to take advantage of. We do have a very successful program called Redeploy for Juveniles, which has been in place for some years now as a pilot project in St. Clair County. And the focus of that program is rather than sending the juvenile off to the Juvenile Department of Justice, which is basically juvie prison, rather than sending them there, there's an opportunity to throw a great deal of resources at that juvenile, at the juvenile's family, to get at the underlying causes, maybe the mental health issues that may be there, the poverty, education issues, to give a chance to pull this kid off the felony factory line. We unfortunately in St. Clair County and many communities across the United States, we have young kids that are born into difficult circumstances, and it's almost as if they are predestined to be standing in front of a judge and being sentenced to prison for the rest of their life because they've killed someone. Well, they don't start out that way. They aren't born into this world with a gun in their hand or doing drugs. Some things happen along the way. And so that's why we're trying to focus more of our efforts on things like juvenile justice. We put a lot of effort into these big, high-profile murder cases, as we should. Those are terrible, terrible acts that demand justice. But if we put that kind of effort from a prosecutorial standpoint and from a law enforcement standpoint into pulling these kids out of the fire and giving them a chance and doing these creative type of solutions, we have another diversion program that we've just started for juveniles. We've also modeled that program and put that into the adult scenario as well, where we have too many adults, young adults, particularly young African-American males, that are branded with a felony for the rest of their life. And then they can't get employed. They can't get scholarships. They're trapped in that cycle. So we have something called the Offender Accountability Program, where if they're willing to do community service, they pay this participation fee, they pay restitution if there's damage to a victim, then we don't even charge the case. It is not something they have to expunge. It's not something they have to go back and try to clean up, or we don't even charge it if they're willing to go through this process and make right what they've done wrong. And so I think that type of approach that the caller was talking about is something that we are using quite a bit, and I'm optimistic that it's going to produce some good results for the people in the community.
You talk about the potential for young men and many cases women too going to prison for the rest of their life as young adults. In a sense, they'd be the lucky ones because so many of them are dead by the time they're 23.
The statistics aren't good.
They're not good.
When I go to talk to young men in schools like Avant and Washington Park, I go with other leaders, good role models in the African-American community, and one of the things I tell them is it's as if they have a slow-motion bullet coming right for them. But they have the opportunity with the right choices to step out of the way of that bullet. They can make a different choice. They don't have to go down that path, and we need to do things to help them to be able to make those good decisions.
Ann Rogers, it has to start with the kids, does it not? I mean,
it definitely starts with the children. As far as with the education and the training, one of the things too, I know that Good Samaritan, within the community, is doing great things for the children. They have an after school program where they teach the children as far as homework, not teach, but as, you know, help with the homework and things of that nature. As they do have, for my full understanding, computers. So we have actually watched them, Joanne Baker at Good Samaritan. She is she's awesome with the kids. And when we were actually doing our cleanup back in on September 12th, I seen the kids running in there, and that told me something right there, that they was running in there, you know, to get a meal. And then right after the meal, they go right in as far as with the training and things of that nature.
Steve, how about on the federal level, your level, in dealing with young people? I assume it's a little bit different with what you have to work with.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, we all realize that we need to get into the younger mindset in terms of – it used to be as prosecutors that said we got to talk to these people when they're in high school. Well, that doesn't work anymore. We need to reach these kids in grade school. We need to reach them at third grade. And really, it's all part, Don, of being smart on crime. We need to – part of the violent crimes – anti-violent crime strategy laid out by the Department of Justice in November of 2010 was let's do prevention. Let's prevent crime from occurring. Let's do enforcement. Enforcement is strong, impactful prosecution, and let's do reentry. Let's help those who are returning citizens, those individuals who have gone to prison. They've paid their debt to society. Let's help them become good citizens again so they do not commit another crime. So in terms of doing what I call community outreach, we do a lot of community outreach. I've actually tasked all of my federal prosecutors that work for me as part of their job to do community outreach. I want to know what they are doing to reach out to the community to go speak at a school, go speak at a not-for-profit organization, go help someone. We don't just put people in prison.
Mm-hmm. How have you had a chance yet to assess how Attorney General Holder's decision to waive mandatory minimum sentence is working? Is that up and running at this point?
It is. In terms of that, we haven't had an opportunity to assess what impact it's had. I know in our particular office, we reviewed every case in which we had a mandatory minimum charged, and we assessed as to whether or not that charge should stay or whether it should be changed. There was probably a half a dozen cases where it changed because the person qualified. For example, if they're part of an organized crime or a cartel, if there's violence involved, then they wouldn't qualify for that exception to reduce the mandatory minimum. But quite frankly, what Attorney General Holder laid out formally last month in addressing the review of mandatory minimums, I have been doing for the 3 years I've been U.S. Attorney. We were charged with doing individualized assessment of each cases, and that's what we have done. So it didn't make a big difference in my particular United States Attorney's office.
How about you, Brendan? Is this something that impacts your office? I know it's the Attorney General and you're a state's attorney, but...
Well, I think the spirit of what the Attorney General was talking about, the recognition that there are so many people affected by the prosecution of drug crimes that maybe the approach that has been taken for decades now may not be the one that produces the best results. So there has to be a recognition that there are dealers who are profiting off of people's misery and they need to be prosecuted as aggressively as possible. But then there are people who are addicts and they need as much help as possible. And I think that recognizing that I think is productive. I will say I'm on the National District Attorneys Association board and our opinion of what the Attorney General had said was to say, yes, that's correct. But I think in many circumstances, the idea that you have a first-time drug offender going to prison, that's basically a myth. That's not occurring anyway. And so the spirit of what the Attorney General, as the top law enforcement official in the country, what he was saying is something that prosecutors have been doing for a long, long time, maybe about the past 10 years. There's been a real shift in focusing on treatment. So I think that was the top law enforcement official in the country recognizing what is already the case at most local prosecutions. And the fact is 95% of criminal cases are prosecuted at the local level. We have a very aggressive United States attorney who has massively increased his caseload. I hope the other U.S. attorneys around the country follow his lead because there is a sense that they could be doing more. And I think in the Northern District in Chicago, they are starting to catch on to what Mr. Wigginton has been doing, Steve's aggressive approach, and realizing they have to get some skin in the game.
Do you have drug courts over there?
Yeah, we do. We do.
How do they work?
I think it's great. I think drug court is a great concept. We have drug court. We have drug school. We have a mental health court. And we have a veterans court. I think these specialty courts, some people are skeptical of them. They think it's just these cute little boutique-y concepts that may not necessarily do anything different than a regular court does. But I think drug court in particular has been very helpful. I think it's a great option for people, people who are really lost, deeply entrenched in their addiction, and they have committed crimes like theft because they're stealing to support their habit. They're prostituting themselves because of their drug habit. They're doing other really bad things like forging checks or doing whatever they can do to get their hands on more drugs. And those are the kind of people that I think drug court is good for, because this is a person who is, yes, they've committed crimes, but they've also been victimized by the fact that we have so many drugs available in our society. Statistically speaking, about 15% of people have an addictive potential. And if they come into contact with those type of substances, whether they are prescription, which is a real problem, or whether they are illegal, which is also a big problem, they are likely to become addicts. And so there is a segment of the population that really can get trapped in that cycle. And drug courts and other specialty courts like the drug school option or veterans court that goes after veterans and tries to get them some sort of rehabilitation. Those are all positive things. I mean, it's not the traditional prosecution type of thing. It's not. And we think you do something bad, we're going to punish you. But that is really not the model that's most effective in terms of improving public safety. Getting this person on the right track, that makes society safer.
Ann Rogers, given the way this discussion has gone so far, and it's sort of dark in the sense that there are so many problems out there that people are trying to solve but have defied solution for so long. You're relatively new to your job as mayor, correct?
Correct. Actually, I was a trustee for 4 years. And yes, I just took my seat May 7th.
I suppose people would wonder, why would anyone want to go into that particular business, given the location, the times, and the problems that just seem almost insurmountable?
The reason why is I've actually been a resident for, 35 or so years. And when I took on this, it's home. So when the question came about, why would you want to go into politics? Why do you want to be the mayor? And my response was, why not? When you actually walk the streets and you know the streets, like I do, it was more, why not? Someone has to actually step in to help the citizens of Washington Park. And once again, my answer is, why not?
Is it possible to be optimistic given the scope of the problem?
It is. With that actually being said, Washington Park is actually moving. And it's not moving just because of me. It's moving because we're actually transparent. It's moving because we have administration, since I've walked in, that is actually looking forward and trying to do the right things within Washington Park. We do have a stigma. We've had that stigma for years. So with that actually being said, with our administration that have actually come in, we are working to be transparent. We are working to do better things for Washington Park.
Let me remind our listeners that you are listening to St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Steve, back to you. I'm glad to hear that the mayor is optimistic. Is it possible in your business to be optimistic given the scope of the problem?
Absolutely. In fact, you have to be optimistic. Otherwise, you just throw in the towel. And everyone who knows me knows I'm an eternal optimist. But we are seeing a lot of good things. Over the last 3 years, I mean, we've seen a vast improvement in safety in public housing. We've made a specific effort to focus on public housing in East St. Louis and Washington Park. We have a ban and bar initiative that we've had. Everybody 13 years and older has to have a lanyard with a photo ID so we know whether or not you belong there. We're holding people who live there accountable. If you cause trouble or allow others to come to your apartment and cause trouble, then you get evicted. That never happened before Brendan and I came into these offices. It was kind of lawless. So we've seen improvement there. Having Mayor Ann Rogers is optimistic. She brings a whole new breath of fresh air to Washington Park. She's committed. She's working with us. Prior administrations avoided us. So, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. And again, we're talking about a lot of good people who are working under very difficult circumstances to just get through their daily lives.
How are the civil libertarians reacting to some of these issues, particularly privacy issues, for instance, having to wear lanyards and prove who you are, that sort of thing?
I haven't received any negative feedback from any civil libertarians with that respect. We have in high schools, people have to wear lanyards with photo IDs now. If we're providing some subsidy in public housing, that's a privilege. It's not a right. So we can put reasonable restrictions up. And we want, again, it's to make sure that if you are there, you're there for a good reason and you're not some dude coming back from prison who's hanging out in the housing facilities, which is what we once saw.
Yeah.
What are you saying, Mayor Rogers?
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. With that actually being said, I wouldn't actually be sent here today without we were talking about crime. We're on the show today without even mentioning my chief of police, which is Mr. Aubrey Keller. He's a breath of fresh air. I have to say that. Educated, experience, the morale that's within our departments right now is up. It's matter of fact, it's way up.
And yet he wants to disband the department.
But with that actually being said, that has actually come about. But with that, we had Mr. Keller to come in, and for many times as I was even sitting as a trustee, it was encouraging to me to just walk in and to see what's actually going on within the department and just collecting or just sitting there. He told me some things that was going on within the department that actually just brought, you know, again, it was an eye opener. But with that being said,
well, you have 1 minute left.
I would commend the chief of police for recommending that. It's not so much disbanding as we need to regionalize. We need to concentrate our resources, combine our resources. So it's not so much disbanding. He's looking at the greater good for the people of Washington Park, that
sure,
they would be better serviced by St. Clair County Sheriff's Department.
Yeah.
Brendan, I'll give you the last word. We only have 30 seconds.
There's great cause for optimism. I really believe that there is. I think you've seen people that have even been around a long time that may in the past have been part of the problem. They probably realized that it couldn't be better, and now they realize it can be better, and they're trying to be part of the solution. I think you see you see new mayors coming up. You see new chiefs of police. You see people that are willing to make difficult choices and say, this far, no further. We can't keep doing this. It's got to be done better. And I think there's a great reason, a great deal of a reason for optimism in these communities.
Well, let's leave it on that note. We have to say goodbye. Steve Wigington, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brendan Kelly, great to see you again. And Ann Rogers, wonderful to meet you. Good luck
thank
in
you.
Washington Park.
Thank you.
Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk with Wynton Marsalis about his career and his Jazz St. Louis performance at the Two Hill, and with Bruno David about an exhibition of the work of Bill Cohn. And in the next installment of Soundbites, produced with Sauce Magazine, he'll take a look at restaurants in the Del Mar Loop. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the situation in Washington with 1st District Congressman Lacey Clay, and then we'll talk to Jeffrey Stout about using grassroots organizing, democratic principles and religious ideas and institutions to improve social welfare. Archive versions of the program are available for download or podcast. We thank Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and the assistant producers Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, Kristen Torres, and Spencer Reed for their help. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.